And we are back. We are welcoming Miles Minoff from Periculum Consulting. So, Miles, let's start by telling us more about yourself and your role in the company.
Thanks, Connor. Thanks for the opportunity. So, Periculum Consult is a legal and a risk compliance consultancy. Basically, if I had to answer it very simply, we help clients comply with legislation. So, my background, this is a company is about 5 years old now. Came from corporate, and risk management and compliance was something that just started picking up in South Africa. Delved deep into legal and risk. And today we consult over 200 clients, helping them comply with various pieces of legislation. I think the biggest now currently is health and safety, and also some labor, but also new legislation like POPI, which is new, PIA, which is new. And we just, we keep clients up to date with what's happening with new laws to help them comply in their businesses.
Yeah, because it's so important. I mean, with especially your, not necessarily just your smaller businesses, but I mean, now there's like this new beneficial ownership that we need to put into play. There's all these new things that are coming to play. And I mean, Poppy's already been something that's almost 2 years in play. So it's actually so incredible that you're doing that work and there's actually local individuals and businesses that are able to assist these guys. But I saw recently that you were involved in the fishing and marine industry. What unique challenges are you addressing in that sector?
My background is I came from the fishing and the marine sector. I'm sure those of you that have followed the news, we saw this year we had a substantial amount of deaths at sea. So I help companies comply with legislation. So fishing vessels that go out to sea, there's a massive amount of compliance, especially with safety. It's known as one of the most dangerous jobs in the world. And what we've seen there is the level of compliance is quite high. The only problem is that it's not implemented effectively on board the vessels. So we've picked up from our clients that there's a lot of paperwork on vessels, but the crew, there's no implementation. And what we've embarked with to address that challenge is we do a lot of training now, especially for the deckhands, for those that are on the deck, to understand their roles and responsibility in terms of legislation. But I don't think it's only from a fishing and a marine perspective. I think generally from our clients, because we work in various sectors, compliance is a massive thing. Health and safety is a massive thing. I just think it's the implementation thereof. I think the biggest challenge we've picked up now is that some companies feel that health and safety is just an extra responsibility and they just put it onto someone. From our experience, we see that HR individuals that already have a lot of work are told to do health and safety with no real background. And they'll Google stuff and they'll put up templates, but the implementation thereof, you need professionals for that. So it's easy to tell someone, here's a health and safety file, do it, but you need to understand it from a practical perspective, what it actually means for the organization.
Yeah, look, I think the biggest challenge is that we only realize how important it is when we get penalized for not knowing.
Yeah.
So I think it's just awesome that you're involved in training and education, because that's the thing that I feel like a lot of in business in general, not just small businesses, but businesses in general struggle with.
Right.
Is that whole education on why we need it. I mean, let's use a simple example, your workers' compensation.
Right.
Everyone thinks that it's an optional thing until one of your guys fall down a stairs and break something.
Yeah.
And then they're actually unable to work. And then it's now on you to fix this instead of just applying by workers' comp.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Last week, the Department of Labor had a blitz throughout South Africa. They did a whole labor blitz. So they were looking at labor laws, QUEDA. They were looking at health and safety laws, labor relation laws. They did over 8,000 inspections throughout South Africa, and they found that there's a 47% compliance with companies. So it means that they went out, they went to the ticker box, health and safety, labor, and they picked up that there are too many employers in South Africa that don't comply with the normal basic legislation. And we're not saying the legislation like Poppy, which is extra. We're not seeing the extra legislations and PIA. It's just the basics, looking after your employees, making sure that they know what they're doing, that they get training, that they're wearing the PPE, first aid kits and first aiders. And it's quite interesting. The findings from the report from a health and safety perspective is it's just your basic health and safety requirements that are not met. And as she reported, 10 million rands worth of fines were now issued to all the employers. So it is a message to employers that don't wait until the Department of Labor comes, or don't wait until someone gets injured. Start with the basics. And it's not, I mean, basics are really just a file and implementing, and it's not expensive exercise. It becomes expensive exercise if you wait too long for it.
Yeah, I found something similar from my experience with SARS. I found something similar happen in the beginning of this year with CIPC as well, where they just started doing mass deregistrations and mass penalties for SARS when you didn't do your tax returns. And we had a lot of clients that asked us, but we've seen these messages, how can they just do this? And it's right. Just basically where some clients were either not aware or just not prepared to do it.
100%.
So it's something that I feel like more education needs to go into it.
Yeah.
And obviously just more businesses like you guys.
Yeah.
Because I mean, where there's education and there's professionals, you'll always see progress.
100%.
So let's go on to like success stories on work that you've done, because you know, we talk about challenges and we talk about, you know, the bad things, but there's also good things involved as well.
Yeah, I think I was quite fortunate to be of the first risk officers, qualified risk officers in South Africa, and I gained a lot of experience from an executive level of what risk management is, and starting from the bottom, doing all the physical and the health and safety on the ground to a C-suit executive type of role with oversight of various organizations. It gave me the platform to understand South Africa from a risk perspective. My background, I also have a legal background, so it also assists considerably because I can interpret legislation. So all compliance and risk management has got to do with legislation. I can interpret legislation, so I make it layman's terms easy for my clients to understand. I think success stories, in 2018, I got an award for Fishing Industry Risk Management of the Year Award. I think recently also I've got an award for Western Cape Risk Manager Award of Western Cape and consultant. But I also think from success stories for us as a company is to see when clients have nothing, implement what we do, and at the end of the day, they're happy what we're doing. For me, that's the success, because in the beginning, when a client doesn't have anything from a health and safety perspective, immediately they're thinking how much it costs. And the first thing they always say is, I can go Google this, I can do this template, and. So after some convincing, they find out, okay, we give them the file and we give them everything. And once you give it, they actually say, okay, but this is what I'm getting is much more than what you're paying for it, because it adds value to the organization and we're looking after our employees. So I think the trophies and the medals is not really the success for me. I think the success is when a client is happy and the client says, Miles, come back and we're going to do the health and safety meeting. Come back, we need training. And the nice thing that I like about the health and safety relationship is an ongoing relationship. It's not, you're not taking something from the rack and you're done with the client. It is, here's the file, there's an ongoing relationship, and we love doing training, so that adds value. We love implementing framework, that adds value. We also see that it empowers employees that don't necessarily have the responsibilities for health and safety, for them to start doing it. It empowers them because now they feel that they're also contributing to the organization.
Yeah, look, I think the awards is more of the fruit of your work.
Yeah, 100%.
You know what I mean? Like, don't get me wrong, everyone likes the recognition of the work, but I think awards-wise, it's always the fruit of your labor.
Yeah.
You can always look back at it and go, you know what, it's
yeah,
almost been like something you can look back and you can be pleased with.
Yeah.
But like, I think the biggest reward is seeing, like you said, your client progressing in whichever industry they're busy with. And I think, like you said, your business or your business model is an ongoing relationship. So you almost grow entirely with the company, because if they've got new staff, they still need that, and those new staff needs to be trained. So I really like the business model that you've got, and I also like the heart that you have for business as a whole, which is why I also want to just change or switch gears a bit to your involvement with the Village Guy. I just want to know the story. I know a lot of people know the story, but like, tell us the story. Where is it now, and where do you see it going?
Village Guy is 5 years old. It's just a passion project that I started 5 years ago. It's a storytelling platform. I think the most easiest way to say it is I picked up 5 years ago in Paul. There's a lot of people that are achieving quite a lot of stuff from various backgrounds. And I always told myself, if I interview somebody that lives in, say it's Lantana Street, and this person becomes an Olympian, what is stopping the kid that also lives in Lantana Street of having the dream of also becoming an Olympian? So it's a very a community-based type of organization where we just tell stories of achievers in Paul, sharing their stories, and we've got this slogan of building an inspired community through storytelling.
Yeah, because I mean, I can actually remember the first time I saw your show, but almost your page, where you were interviewing a friend of mine, Chad Martinez, about his business way back when.
Right.
And I mean, it's awesome just to see, for example, I know it's a massive shout out to him, but just seeing what he's doing now.
Right.
So it's really awesome. I really love what you've done on that side of things, because I mean, we just mentioned one guy, but I mean, we know many sportsmen who you've interviewed that's obviously taken off, and now they're role models to our community as well. So it's just awesome to see what you're doing there. So I just wanted to just also switch gears because there's been a lot of things that have going on lately. There's been that World Cleanup Day that you've been involved in. There's also been the 17th Fair Trade Cities and Towns International Conference that you were involved with. I just wanted to know, how did you experience that, the fair trade? And then obviously, what inspired you to get involved with the World Cleanup Day?
World Cleanup Day, that was a cleanup of the Berg River.
Yeah.
So I'm also involved in a waste management company as well. Because we're trying to save the planet as a company, and every bit helps. And we came across the initiative for cleaning the Berg River. They reached out, and we sponsored a few black bags and gloves. But basically, it was just trying to get the community down onto the Berg River to clean up the Berg River. I think they picked up about 60 bags of plastic of rubbish along the Berg River. But it was really nice because there was also an association, Biosphere, Cape Winers Biosphere, and they also gave some educational awareness campaigns to some of the kids there, put them at tables, tell them what pollution means. But I think coming from that, it was something that went in my mind, is like, how is it, like, you know, you do the things they're doing overseas, if you put a net across the Berg River to catch all the rubbish, how much rubbish would actually be coming down the Berg River if you just put something there as a pilot project. But I think the rubbish that we picked up was, I don't really think it comes from the Berg River. I think it's more from people that are visiting the area and maybe just leave the rubbish there. That was the cleanup. And then the fair trade, so we all know Drakenstein is a certified fair trade city. And they was the first time on African continent that they hosted the Fair Trade, which is an international organization. Basically, what it is from a European perspective, they earmark municipalities like Drakenstein, and they try and implement initiatives that encourage people to, number one, support local, but also encourage them to have a sustainable business. And the reason for sustainable business is the phrase that pays nowadays is ESG. So it means environmental, social, and governance. We do a lot of work in that space. It means that companies are now encouraged to comply with principle-based advantages like looking after the environment. So if you're a company, what are you doing with the environment? What's your footprint from a waste perspective, etc.? Social ease, are you looking after employees? Are you looking after the community that you're living in, working in, or in prison? And governance ease, is your board governing according to, let's call it, the King Five or Companies Act? So that sustainable model means that Fairtrade wants companies to follow ESG principles by looking after the environment socially and from a governance perspective. The experience was cool. We were there for the Friday, the Saturday, and the Sunday. Interesting talks and very interesting panel, the discussions from a small business perspective. But I think it was also nice to see what other small businesses are out there that have sustainable business models. I know in Drakenstein, there are certain farms that are fair trade approved. It's meaning that they follow these principles and they can get the fair trade certified fair trade banner, and then it can be exported throughout the world. In the agriculture, it's the same as Vita, and even Vita, it's Caesar. ESG, looking after the environment and looking after your employees, has become a business advantage nowadays. So if you look at all the listed companies in South Africa, they all have an ESG model, and that is because investors overseas only want to invest in companies that are following those principles.
Yeah, because I mean, I had a conversation off air with Cheryl about the whole fair trade logo and everything, and I almost looked at it as, you know, like proudly South Africa.
100%.
It's, for me, it should be something like that.
100%.
So what many people won't know is that, like you said, you have a legal background.
Right.
And you've obviously practiced for 4 years and so on. I want to know, you left from a purely corporate environment into business.
Right.
Do you think that you and a lot of people are doing so? Do you think it's like an age where it's a digital nomad age or a social entrepreneur age? Or do you think just being entrepreneurship is almost something innately South African?
I think firstly, to quit corporate world and start a business is crazy. Like I don't think, I think you really have to believe in yourself 100% to leave corporate world and to go start a business, number one. I think number two is, if you really believe in your idea, no one is going to convince you otherwise. People will probably think you're crazy because you already think you are crazy to do it. People will think you are insane, but you already know that you are insane doing it. But if you really believe that whatever you want to start is going to work, I don't think anybody can stop you. I think what I've learned is, it is the point when you want to give up is the point where you should not be giving up. I think that's what I've learned.
That's actually incredible stuff, because I mean, a lot of people have so many ideas. I mean, we shared about a client of mine who was involved in HR but is doing cake pops.
Yeah.
So I feel like a lot of people who are in corporate, they've got this passion or they've got this side project that they're busy with. And I feel like more and more, ever since COVID, everyone's just taken the jump. Or I've seen more people take the jump. And I've almost seen it like, almost as something innately South African ever since COVID, because I feel like in our South African market, it feels like being self-employed or opening a small business is just a better idea than, let's say, in Europe and so on. Or it's now becoming more favorable.
I think I've got clients abroad and network in South Africa of people that lived abroad. And if you look at a developing country, why do small businesses thrive in a developing country? In a first world country, things all work. There's very little opportunity because everything works. In a country like South Africa, you could come up with a simple idea just to make a bit of convenience and it will work. But also, I think from a South African perspective, we just inherently are hard workers. We don't give up easily. I mean, as a nation alone, you can see all the stuff we've been through. It's just, things just happen. If whatever sport is playing, everybody just gets together. But I think it's, there's a lot of characteristics from South Africans that make them successful. And the word that always pops up in my head is like, we as a nation, we're just resilient. We just, with all the doom and gloom, everything just pops up for brightness. But I think when you talk about people quitting corporate to do their thing, I think it's a saying we wrote on the whiteboard after I read a book. It was, what would you do if you wouldn't fail? Like, if you knew you're not going to fail, what is the thing you'd want to do? And that's also a question I ask my friendship group as well. Like, they all have dreams, we all want to do things. But if you really knew you're not going to fail, what is the thing that you'd start?
Absolutely. So my final question to you is, what's next for Miles Minogue?
Yo, dude. I think it's really to establish Periculum as a organization, adding value to clients. I think with the waste management company, exactly the same. Have it on the a brand that is on top of everybody's lips when it comes to waste, but also a company that is contributing to the waste of South Africa. Let's call it South Africa. And I think from a village guy perspective is, I've also realized that if I could do the village guy full time, it probably, that would be my dream come true. Because, yeah, I would say out of the businesses, the one that doesn't make money is the one I probably enjoy the most. And that's probably why I enjoy it, because there's no running after money. And a lot of people have asked me, like, why don't I make it a fully fledged business? It's always been a dream, but I think once you start including monetary aspect to your passion, there might just be a problem. Well, not a problem, it might be a challenge, because now I'm doing it for free. I enjoy it. I do it in my spare time. I'm a bit nervous to make it a business concern, because I think it might just shift from a purpose perspective. And I'm very nervous about that. I haven't thought too hard about it, but just thinking about it now, I think doing it for free, doing your passion for free and not making it a business yet, is, I think there's a thrill behind it. There's a thrill for me behind it. Yeah,
look, at the end of the day, like you said, it's your passion project. So passion projects aren't necessarily something we need to make money out of.
100%.
And it's something that people can see your heart.
Yeah.
And I think that's the most important thing, because it shows your authentic self.
Mm.
And I think in business nowadays, people know us as brands. So if you're a small business and you run a small business and the only people the client sees is you, then you're the brand.
Right.
And I feel like this is that opportunity for you to see, for other people to see your authentic self,
right,
and your heart. Because, I mean, it's easy for us to say we're worried about a concern when we get paid to worry for that concern.
Right.
But when you're doing it for free, like you're doing it, it's your time and it's your money.
Right.
But in all that effort, because, I mean, there's editing, there's marketing, there's social media, and social media in itself is its own thing. So it's really awesome to see what you're doing. I am a full-time supporter.
Yeah, and it's interesting, like with Periculum also, it's, we're not a big staff complement, we're two people doing it. With Village Guy as well, we're not a big staff, we're two people that are doing it. But I think it's out there, because what we're putting out there into the universe on social media and the conversations we have, it might seem like a massive business. We go to clients and then they say, are you able to manage the two of you? And they say, it doesn't matter what size you are, we will make a way, because if it's a big client, two of us will make it happen. So it's, I think it's, from a small business perspective, you don't, you don't really need a large staff complement. I think if everybody is just on this, has the same vision for what you're doing, yeah, it works perfectly. With a waste management company as well, we don't have a big staff complement, but everybody understands the vision of the company. It's a small business. They all agree that they're moving in the same direction, and it makes your life much easier.
Absolutely. I think in my company, I've only got 5 people,
yeah,
including myself. And I couldn't be happier.
Yeah.
Honestly, I couldn't be happier because it's easier to get 4 other people,
yeah,
to share in your vision than it is to get 10, 20, 30.
100%.
And then you've also got to get your management, who's under you, to share that same vision. And I find with bigger teams, usually that dilutes the vision.
Yeah, 100%. No, I agree. And I think having a young staff complement, that's energetic, and I also think that whatever, it's always in companies, it's always the top down approach. If you are a leader of the organization and you're just optimistic about the world and you're just speaking the good about the world and you're just positive about the world, I think that trickles down to your staff complement, and they would also say, okay, but is that guy crazy to be positive and optimistic all the time? They must make some sense. And I think that also helps a lot in a small organization.
Thank you so much for your insight and your time.
Cool, man.
I really appreciate coming here. For those who do not have your contact details, this is your opportunity.
Is this my plug?
This is your plug.
So I've got a website, www.periculumconsult.com. I'm not going to spell it. You can just Google it there. We're on Facebook. Yesterday we chatted a bit about social media. What does a legal and risk consultancy put out as content? So we are going to probably start putting out nice, interesting content of that. And then you can, in emails, is also just info@periculumconsult.co.za. So if you need any help with health and safety, speak to us.
Thank you so much. We're going to take a quick break, pay some bills, and listen to some awesome music. We'll see you shortly.